From him, Jamie realized again that sex would be a problem sooner or later. She could wear 6 overcoats and it still wouldn't help, he knew. The other women, too. Month after month, living this close to them, maybe she'll have to start putting suppressants in our food. There had been no trouble about sex during the 5-month flight to Mars. Except for one night, if anyone had bedded down with anyone else, they had kept it quiet. That one night had involved Dex, Jamie knew. Had it been VJ with him? He had never asked, never really wanted to know. Jamie remembered Dr. Lee's fumbling little lecture from 6 years earlier. "We all have healthy sex drive," the first expedition's director had said. "We will be living together for nearly 2 years. As your expedition commander, I expect you to behave in adult manner. Adult human beings, not childish monkeys." Good advice, Jamie thought. Behave in an adult manner. Great advice. VJ with Dex. A one-night stand, he told himself, doesn't mean anything. Not much it doesn't. Then why is she warning me about him?
What game is she playing?
He sat at the galley table for a long time, listening to the chugs and hums of the equipment that was keeping them alive on the surface of Mars, waiting for the familiar sounds to soothe him, reassure him that everything was normal. It didn't work. Jamie leaned back and peered up into the shadows of the dome overhead, trying to close his mind to it all. "Find the balance," he commanded himself. "Find the path." He closed his eyes, deliberately slowed his breathing. Then he heard it. The soft keening of the wind outside, stroking gently against the plastic bubble from another world. "Hear it, Grandfather?" he asked silently. "That's the breath of Mars, the voice of the red world. It's a gentle world, Grandfather. It welcomes us." "There's nothing to fear here on Mars," Jamie thought. "We've got the proper equipment. We can protect ourselves and live and work here. Mars doesn't want to harm us. As long as we don't do anything foolish, Mars will be good to us. The real dangers are those we carry with us: envy, ambition, jealousy, fear, and greed and hate. We carry it all with us, locked in our hearts. Even here on Mars, we haven't changed. It's all here with us because we brought it ourselves." He thought he heard, above the sighing of the cold night wind, the mad laughter of the trickster, Coyote. Dossier, James Fox Waterman. Jamie was shocked when he realized that he was not being considered to go on the second expedition to Mars. For 3 years he had been something of a celebrity in the international community of scientists, the man who had insisted on exploring the Valles Marineris, the man whose stubborn determination had led to the discovery of life on Mars. He married Joanna Brumado, one of the 2 biologists who actually made the discovery. Joanna and her colleague, Ilona Maliter, shared a special Nobel Prize for their find. Jamie went with his Brazilian bride to conferences all over the world, often accompanied by her father, Alberto Brumado, the astronomer-turned-activist who had spent his life cajoling the world's governments and corporations into supporting a human expedition to the Red Planet. The marriage had been a mistake from the start. Born of the enforced intimacy of the long years of training and the actual expedition to Mars, it fell apart almost as soon as they took their vows in the magnificent old Candelaria Church in Rio de Janeiro. Jamie was a celebrity among the scientists, but Joanna was an international star. Beloved of the media, the woman who discovered life on Mars, an instant target of the paparazzi wherever she went. They drifted apart even though they traveled together. And Jamie had known from the beginning that Joanna's world really revolved around her father. The kindest, gentlest man in the world, Alberto Brumado, was still the one man whom his daughter worshipped. She had gone to Mars despite her inner terrors, because he was too old to go himself. She had married, despite her inner doubts, because he wanted to see her married before he died. He died much too soon, cut down while he labored as a volunteer during an Ebola epidemic that decimated Sao Paulo, despite the multinational task force of medical aid. With her father gone, but her stardom elevated even more by the tragedy, Joanna, for the first time in her life, found that she wanted to live to please herself. She enjoyed the limelight. Jamie did not. She wanted her freedom. Jamie numbly agreed. That was when he discovered that he was being passed over for the return expedition.
"You are 3 years out of date," said Father DiNardo, his naturally soft voice even gentler than normal. "For 3 years you have been attending conferences and media interviews instead of doing research."
Jamie had gone to the Jesuit geologist once he realized that the planning for the second expedition was going ahead without him. They sat in a small office in the Vatican, Jamie tensely hunched in an ornately carved wooden chair that dated to the High Renaissance, DiNardo sitting behind a modern desk of gleaming rosewood. Except for his clerical garb, DiNardo would have looked like a bouncer in a cheap bistro. He was built like a fireplug, short and wide. His scalp was shaved bald, his swarthy jaw stubbled.
"I've kept up with the results coming out of the various studies," Jamie protested.
DiNardo made a sympathetic smile.
"Ah, yes, certainly. But you have not produced any of those results yourself. You have allowed others to do the work. 3 years is a very long time."
The priest had originally been selected to be chief geologist for the first expedition. A sudden gallbladder attack had grounded him. Nearly scandalous political maneuverings had put Jamie in his place.
"I've got to go back there," Jamie muttered. "I've got to."
DiNardo said nothing. Jamie looked into the older man's calm brown eyes.
"Nobody's planning to look for the cliff dwelling. That ought to be our first priority."
The priest sighed patiently.
"Let me give you a piece of friendly advice," he said, the hint of soft Italian vowels at the end of his English words. "The more you mention the cliff dwelling, the less likely that you will be accepted for the mission. But it's there. I saw it. You saw a rock formation that was many kilometers away from you. You believe it might be an artificial construction. No one else believes it is anything but a natural formation."
"I took video footage," Jamie insisted.
"And we have all studied your video very intensely. I myself have had it computer enhanced. The formation appears to be a wall of some kind, standing in a niche in the cliff face. There is no evidence that it is artificial. That's why we've got to go back there, to find out what it really is."
DiNardo shook his head sadly.
"Do you want to be included in the second expedition or not?"
"Of course I want to be."
"Then stop talking about your cliff dwelling. It makes you look ridiculous. It makes you appear to be a fanatic. Be quiet, and I will do whatever I can to find you a berth on the mission."
Jamie stared at the priest for a long time, his mind racing.
He can't accept the possibility that there might have been intelligent life on Mars. None of them want to think about that possibility. The lichen surprised them, but the idea of intelligent life is too much for them to swallow. They can deal with a simple life form on Mars, but they won't open their minds to the bigger possibilities.
"Why?" Jamie asked himself. The answer came to him. "They're afraid." Li Chengdu was very satisfied with his life now. He had been chosen mission director of the first Mars expedition as a political compromise. Born in Singapore of Chinese parents, a respected atmospheric physicist, he did not belong in any entrenched political camp. As mission director, he had remained in orbit above Mars and watched with a mixture of dread and curiosity as Jamie Waterman had wrested actual command of the scientists and astronauts on the ground team and reshaped the expedition to his purposes. Waterman had been extremely fortunate. Thanks to his insistence, they found living organisms at the floor of the Grand Canyon. And Li Chengdu, upon their return from Mars, was invited to join the faculty of the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. A fitting reward, he thought, for his leadership and patience, and Waterman's luck. Now an older, warier James Waterman walked beside him through the woods outside the red brick campus of the Institute. A scant centimeter short of 2 meters high,
The lean, sallow-faced Lee towered over Jamie, his long legs devouring